Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Casting Shadows by E. A. Copan, narrated by Travis Baldry. Chapter 1. Hades shuffled the cards one more time before inquiring, "So, did you ask her yet?" I waited for him to deal out a couple of cards before picking them up, Ace of Clubs and the Eight of Spades. It felt like a bad omen, but I shrugged it off. It had been almost 3 months since anything really bad had happened. No gods had rolled into town with the apocalypse on their minds. No crazy fey queens had involved me or anyone I cared about in their schemes, and no titans had tried to kill anybody. The last few months had been the most peaceful since I'd become death, which probably wasn't saying much. Sure, stuff had gone wrong. I hadn't heard from Remy at all, for example, but I just figured she needed her space. Considering Foxglove had also disappeared, I thought maybe the two of them had finally run off together, despite my objections. My life had settled into a regular rhythm. Work through the week, dates with Emma on the weekend, and poker nights with Nate, Hades, and Jean on Tuesdays. I picked up the next card, another eight, and shifted my hand around. "Not yet." Hades dealt the last round of cards and slapped the deck onto the table before flipping over the five of spades. "Why not?" I shrugged. "Just waiting for the right time, I guess."
"Stalling is more like it."
Jean Lafitte, or rather the disembodied spirit of Jean Lafitte, curled his ghostly mustache with two fingers.
"It's been 2 weeks since he picked out the ring."
Nate sighed and nodded.
"Sometimes I think it's a good thing I never had to propose to Leah."
I frowned at the cards in my hand and lowered them face down to the table.
"Hold up. You didn't?"
"She asked me."
Nate pushed his glasses up his nose, only to have them fall right back down.
"It was sort of a mutual agreement at that point. I never had to make a big deal of it. I guess we're just not that sort of people."
"You should do something extravagant,"
Jean suggested. Hades agreed with a grunt and started swapping out cards.
"You should take her away somewhere. Arrange a flash mob. Definitely get it on video."
When it came to my turn to ask for cards, I declined and rubbed my face.
"Thanks for the suggestions, guys, but I'd really rather not talk about it."
The last few weeks I'd been brainstorming, trying to think up the perfect way to pop the question. Every time I came up with something, I also thought of a dozen ways for it to go wrong. Plus, Emma had been buried in work the last week and a half. She'd even skipped our normal date to work the weekend. Ever since coming back to work, the department had been drowning her in paperwork and training seminars. Who would have thought there'd be so many of those for a cop working cold cases? Nate sighed and tossed his cards down.
"Well, I'm out."
"Me too," said Hades.
"Lazarus?"
Jean gave me a hopeful glance. I flipped over my hand. "Two pair, aces over eights." Jean frowned and revealed a pair of fives with help from the community card.
"You know the dead man's hand is bad luck, right?"
I started to tell him that it was all just superstition, but stopped myself. Here I was, a necromancer and a pale horseman, about to explain to a disembodied spirit that luck wasn't a thing. Guess that would be the pot calling the kettle black, wouldn't it? My phone buzzed. I fished it out of my pocket and frowned at the screen displaying the precinct's number. Emma. Hades collected the cards on the table and started piling them together to reshuffle.
"I thought we all agreed to turn our phones off during poker night."
We had a code when it came to Tuesday nights. No cheating, no takebacks, and no phones. It was the only way to make sure Leah wasn't calling Nate to pick up something from the store every few minutes, and to keep Hades from texting Persephone like some lovesick teenager. Once he discovered texting, he just couldn't help himself. But Emma never called me on Tuesday nights. She knew I wouldn't pick up. Maybe she'd forgotten. No, that wasn't like her either. I'd forget my head if it wasn't attached some days, but not Emma, and she wouldn't call me from the station phone unless it was on official business. A lance of panic struck at my gut as I had another thought. What if someone else was calling? What if they were calling to tell me she was hurt? I stood, phone in hand. I've got to take this. Jean narrowed his eyes and picked up his cards.
That's a slippery slope you're on.
I ignored him and slid my thumb across the screen as I moved away from the table before lifting the phone to my ear. Hello?
Feel like a little stroll?
Asked an unfamiliar voice that definitely wasn't Emma. I was sure I had heard it somewhere before, but couldn't place it.
Excuse me?
I glanced over my shoulder at the guys who decided to play another hand without me.
Who is this? Really? Forgotten me already? Usually I'm difficult to forget, especially since I have something that belongs to you.
I clenched my fist. I don't know who the hell you think you are.
I don't think. I know. And if you want to know more, you'll be at Algiers Point in 15 minutes. Alone.
The phone crackled and popped. Sparks flew, singeing my cheek. I tossed the phone to the sofa where it continued sparking a minute before the whole case melted into a puddle.
Damn it, I just replaced that phone.
Raz?
Nate stood, resting his hands on the table.
Who was that?
Someone who doesn't know who they're messing with. I grabbed a light jacket from where it hung on the wall. As I shrugged it on, my iron staff fell over and rolled to a stop at my feet. If that wasn't a sign I needed to take it, I didn't know what was.
Let me come with you. I would rather break someone's face than lose at poker.
Hades pounded his fist into his palm. I debated taking him up on that offer. Whoever had just called me had clearly earned the face pounding, and Hades could certainly bring the pain. Having been on the other end of those fists, I could verify that much. I grabbed my keys from the hook near the door.
No thanks. I think I can handle myself.
Jean lowered his cards.
Says the guy who still needs help opening pickle jars.
I'm telling you, it was really on there, man.
I adjusted my coat.
You guys keep playing. This won't take long.
Lars, think fast.
Nate tossed me his cell phone from the basket where everyone else had left theirs.
Since yours is on the fritz, call Hades' number if there are any problems.
I nodded and pocketed the cell phone. Algiers Point wasn't far from my house, about 10 minutes by car. I steamed the whole way there, trying to decode the voice. He said he had something that belonged to me, though I hadn't noticed anything missing. All I could think of was that he might mean Emma or Remy, and if he'd so much as touched either of them, I was going to have his head. Loki had tried to use both Emma and Remy against me. I was never going to let that happen again. Ever. I parked near some condos on Morgan Street and walked the rest of the way. It was mid-October and just chilly enough to warrant the jacket. With the breeze sweeping through the city, it was downright cold, uncharacteristically so. Fall had come early to New Orleans, with the temperature plunging into the upper 40s after the sun set. The Big Easy didn't normally see that kind of cold until Christmas. If it kept up, we might actually see snow. Algiers Point was a grassy area on the edge of the Mississippi. From there, you could look across the river and see the high-rises downtown. You'd think such a location would have been a tourist hotspot because of the incredible view, but the city had neglected to turn it into a proper park. Instead, it remained an unkempt, grassy area with random piles of rocks and rubble obscuring the view. Traffic cones lay half-buried in mounds of dirt while broken glass bottles crunched underfoot. I slipped between the remains of a rotting telephone pole and a beer can graveyard, keeping to the edge of the streetlight's halo. A big pile of broken rocks rose to my right. I steadied myself against it, peering out into the long shadow it cast. A single man stood on a large stump overlooking the water, tossing bread to a few fat ducks. He wore a long coat and a big hat, a get-up somehow reminding me of a fisherman at sea. At the right angle, I could just barely make out a big, bushy beard. I didn't recognize him until he turned his head toward me, and I saw the eye patch. Odin. I shoved my hands in the pockets of my jacket and strode out of the shadow. You know bread is bad for ducks, right?
And beer is bad for men. Doesn't seem to slow them down any.
He ripped another chunk off the giant loaf and tossed it into the water.
In fact, the more you tell them not to do something, the more likely they are to do it. You're like toddlers. Reverse psychology is the surest way to get humans to act.
Did you have a reason to call me out here, or are we just catching up?
When was the last time you heard from your daughter?
My hands twitched into fists that I had to force to relax. Been a while. Things are tense. Why?
And your knight, Sir Foxglove?
Odin tore off a fist-sized chunk and lifted it to pitch it farther out into the water. I grabbed the whole loaf and tossed it down into the weeds. If you want something, just come out with it. I don't like being jerked around, especially by Norse gods. Kinda triggers some bad memories, know what I mean?
Cut the crap, Odin. Why am I here?
He smiled like a shark.
That's good. You'll need that sort of focus with what's to come.
What's to come? Instead of answering, Odin turned his back to the river and strode leisurely toward the road. He moved fast enough that I almost had to run to catch him.
In a little while, you're going to have a visitor. Assist him at your own peril.
I planted my feet, but Odin kept walking.
Hey! Hey, I'm talking to you, you one-eyed asshole!
The god halted as if he'd hit a wall. I hurried to stand in front of him, blocking his path.
You said you had something of mine.
Light twinkled in his eye as he lifted a fist in front of his face. His fingers uncurled slowly to reveal a black stripe smeared over his palm like charcoal.
What's that?
Your shadow, he replied. Payment for the horn I loaned you. A small part of your soul. Before you go tying the knot, you're going to want this back. Otherwise, the road ahead doesn't look so bright for either you or the future Mrs. Kerrigan.
How do you know about that?
He lifted a bushy eyebrow.
I'm Odin.
I held out my hand.
Then give it to me.
Odin threw back his head and laughed long and loud.
I like your optimism. I do, but I think I'll hold on to it for a little longer.
He closed his hand and withdrew it.
In the meantime, you should steer clear of the water.
Why? What's in it? He jerked his head back toward the shore.
Why don't you go and see for yourself?
I hesitated. He wouldn't have warned me about the water if it wasn't dangerous.
Come on, lad. There's nothing out there but ducks. You were just there.
I sighed and turned my back to Odin, walking slowly to the stump. I leaned forward and peered through the rushes to look down into the black water, but it was too dark to see anything.
Look closer, Odin called.
You look closer, One-Eye, I grumbled, and carefully stepped onto the old, rotten log. Wood creaked. I inched forward, leaning toward the river and squinting until the murky water came into focus.
Nothing.
Just when I was about to leave, something moved underneath the surface. Something fast. I thought at first it might be a cottonmouth. They liked to lurk in old logs near water. But no, this was too big for that. It pulled back from the shore and then shot out of the water to tower over me by 10 feet.
A tentacle?
No, it wasn't rubbery like that. Had to be something else. My mouth fell open as I realized what I was looking at. A vine, one of those black vines from a fairy that Remy had been so concerned about. But what the hell was it doing here? The vine suddenly whipped out and curled tight around my neck. I raised my hands to try and pry the plant away, but my fingers sank into it and came away stringy, as if it were made of tar. Something bit into my neck and pumped fire into my veins. All I could do was scream until my vision went white from the pain and I passed out. Chapter 2. I woke up with a gasp, already sitting up. Sweat trailed down the side of my face and beaded on my chest while I tried to catch my breath.
A dream? More like a nightmare.
Laz?
Emma's cool, soft hand gripped my shoulder gently, concern lacing her voice.
You okay?
I let out a slow, shaky breath and nodded.
Just a stupid dream.
Distant thunder rumbled outside, and a faint breeze brushed aside the lace curtain of Emma's bedroom, revealing the first signs of a gray morning. I played the events of the dream over in my head, committing as many details as possible to memory before they faded. It had seemed too real for it to mean nothing. Even if it wasn't anything supernatural, dreams were a window into the psyche, a diagnostic tool for the brain's general health. I'd done enough dream interpretation to know nightmares were never a good sign. Emma picked up her phone from the bedside table and sighed.
I'll get the coffee started.
She slid on her slippers and dragged herself across the room to the bathroom. I collapsed against the pillows with a groan. Garfield was right when he said Mondays sucked, but what did he have to complain about? He was a cat. He never had to get up and go to work. Yes, I didn't have to either, since I own my own business. I could leave the shop closed if I wanted. But October kicked off the busy season for fortune tellers like me. Halloween brought in the curious and the pranksters who thought they'd get a kick out of a seance or two, and then the holidays meant people would step up trying to contact lost loved ones on the other side. For a necromancer like me, whose only income was playing counselor to the bereaved and scaring the piss out of idiots who didn't believe, I couldn't afford not to be open this time of year. Plus, there was no point in staying in bed, not when Emma had to report for her shift, too. I groaned again and sat up, rubbing the last signs of sleep from my face. What the hell's the point of working for myself if I can't call off? Once Emma got out of the bathroom, I dragged myself through a shower and shave before making my way to the kitchen. Shaving without a reflection was no easy task, but I was getting used to it. Hadn't cut myself in almost a week now. Apparently, I'd lost my reflection along with my shadow when Odin extracted a tiny piece of my soul 3 months ago. It had been a small price to pay to put Loki down, especially after all the trouble he caused, but the dream had me wondering about the long-term side effects. Emma was already dressed and halfway through making breakfast. Grammy, who'd flown into town a few days ago, sat at the kitchen table with her newspaper, combing through the obituary section. I sat down across from her. Anyone I know? I asked, as Emma passed me a perfect, steaming cup of coffee. The pages rattled as she turned to the next one.
That's a rhetorical question for the Pale Horseman, ain't it?
Yeah, because death knows everyone eventually. Grammy lowered the paper, squinting at me.
Well, somebody's got his boxes in a bunch. What's the matter? And don't tell me she ain't putting out. I had to put my earplugs in last night, and I'm half deaf.
Pervert, I mumbled.
Deviant.
Emma slid a bowl of oatmeal onto the table in front of Grammy.
Lazarus hates Mondays.
I hate Mondays in October especially, I corrected. I've got two group seances today, one for a bunch of frat boys and another for some tourists. Not looking forward to that.
Could be worse,
Emma said, stirring the eggs. I frowned. Don't say that. That's like tempting fate.
If you don't like it, then why do it?
Grammy shoved a heaping spoonful of oatmeal into her mouth. I've got expenses just like everyone else, and Baron Samity's stipend hasn't been all that reliable.
Grammy's got a point, Emma said. You've been putting in a lot more hours than normal. I don't think it would kill you to take a day off here and there, Laz.
My answer was a shrug. That was all I could say without giving away too much, since I wasn't able to lie. The truth was, I'd been working extra to save back enough funds to buy Emma's ring. Now that I had it, I needed to keep working so I could build up my savings. If she said yes, I'd need enough to pay for part of a wedding, the honeymoon, and to still cover my expenses while I took time off. Wasn't easy pulling together that much money, not even as the Pale Horseman. Of course, it might have also been an excuse to avoid actually popping the question, since I didn't know how to approach that either. Grammy studied me, stuck out her bottom lip, and picked up the paper again, hiding behind it.
You know, you'd have few expenses if you just move in already.
Emma nearly choked on her coffee.
Laz likes his space, Grammy. Besides, isn't that Pony's old place? Must have a lot of memories for you.
And where I raised Remy for the short time I had her, I agreed. I didn't want to lose the house, but it hadn't escaped me that proposing would mean we'd eventually have to move in together. Emma's place was much nicer, better neighborhood, but I still had trouble picturing being there all the time. It was cozy, but almost suffocating,
especially with Grammy staying with her. In the end, it was just a house. I could take the memories with me wherever I went, and those were the most important thing. Grammy snorted and turned the page.
You see this column about the new water treatment plan, Emmy? Thing looks like a damn prison. It's supposed to be hurricane-proof.
Emma put two plates of eggs and sausage on the table and sat down in front of one of them.
Biggest project the city's had in a long time, and we need it. The tap water in New Orleans isn't the greatest.
While Emma and Grammy chatted about the water treatment plant and other boring news, I leaned on my arm and pushed my eggs around the plate. I couldn't shake that dream. Odin had said I needed to get my shadow back, or Emma could be in trouble, though he'd refused to give it to me. What did he want me to do? All he'd said was that I should look at the water. I rubbed my neck. What was that thing? If I didn't know any better, I would have thought it was one of those vines I'd seen in summer. Remy had initially made me promise I'd come back and help her figure out what they were and destroy them, but when I tried to make good on that promise, she'd dismissed me. That was the last time we'd spoken. I'd tried twice to get a message to her, but no one seemed to be checking our normal dead drop. Foxglove had disappeared, too. I thought the two of them were shacked up together somewhere, but now I wasn't so sure. It was time to look in on them, which I planned on doing after getting through my two appointments. Odin had also warned me someone would be coming to pay me a visit, someone I should assist at my own risk. Did that mean I was supposed to help him, or that I wasn't supposed to? Damn gods, always speaking in riddles.
Laz!
Emma snapped her fingers in front of my face. I blinked, coming back to the present. Huh?
I asked if the eggs needed salt. I think I overcooked them again.
Nope, perfectly fine. See? I scooped a heaping forkful into my mouth and immediately regretted it.
Definitely overcooked
and in need of salt. Grammy snapped her newspaper wide.
I love you, Emmy, but Lord have mercy on that poor man if he marries you. You couldn't cook eggs to save your damn life. Too much like your daddy. No patience. You gotta turn that heat down.
Thanks, Grammy. Love you, too,
Emma grumbled and stood. She scraped her eggs into the trash and slung her purse over her shoulder.
I've gotta get going or I'll be late.
She gave me a quick peck.
Dinner?
I shook my head. Don't think so. Second seance will probably run late. I can make lunch, though, if you're free.
I'll do my best. Bye, Grammy.
She gave her grandma a quick hug and went for the door.
There are leftovers from last night in the fridge. Be good while I'm gone.
Grammy smiled a toothless smile and winked at me.
She knows me too well, don't she?
I waited until she was gone to dump the eggs, then ran a comb through my hair, grabbed my jacket, and drove to the shop. My first appointment was at 1, but there might be a few curious folk stopping by before then. I was too far from the quarter to get many random customers, but I slipped some cards with my shop information to a couple of the city walking tours to hand out. Most people who came in didn't stay long and didn't buy much. They were looking for voodoo dolls, shrunken heads, and books on the occult, none of which I carried. My biggest seller, aside from tarot readings and palmistry, was the crystal jewelry, protective talismans for one-time use, which I spent my mornings charging. I had a small chunk of rose quartz in my palm and was sitting in the back of the shop when the doorbell chimed. Coming, I called, and set the quartz down. The beaded curtains clicked together loudly as I pushed them aside. What can I... Foxglove staggered up to the counter, one hand pressed firmly against a bleeding wound in his side. More blood oozed from a crusty black cut on his forehead, and he left crimson footprints behind him when he walked. He lunged forward and grabbed me by the shirt.
Help me!
Before I could even respond, the door crashed open, and Finn and Remy barged into my shop, Remy with her sword drawn, and Finn with his shadow whip at the ready.
Where is it?
Remy demanded. Foxglove stumbled away from her. Remy shifted her hold on the sword.
Fine, then. I'll cut it out of you.
And here I thought the frat boys would be the worst thing to happen to me all day. Finn lashed out with his whip, but he didn't catch Foxglove. I stepped in the way. Deep shadow wrapped around my outstretched arm and bit into the skin like 1,000 bee stings. I gritted my teeth and held it. What the hell is going on here?
Step aside, Father,
Remy warned.
He's not who you think he is.
I glanced over at Foxglove, who'd fallen behind the counter. He sat in a pool of his own blood. In all the time I'd known Foxglove, he'd never once run from a fight. But then again, he'd never fought Remy. He was so in love with her, he'd never do anything to hurt her, not even if it cost him his life. He wasn't even armed.
He's dangerous, Finn added.
I glared at him and tugged on the whip. Whatever magic held it in existence faded, and the whip disappeared in a cloud of black smoke. From where I'm standing, it looks like two armed fey from other courts just chased my unarmed knight into my shop. If it were any fey other than you two, I would have put you down already. If this gets out, it's going to look like an act of war. You sure that's what you want? Finn pressed his lips together and looked at Remy. She didn't lower her sword.
Summer has no quarrel with the Court of Miracles.
You will if you kill my knight.
He's not Sir Foxglove, Lazarus.
Finn put a hand on Remy's shoulder before placing himself between my daughter and me.
Use your sight and you'll see I'm right.
I looked from Finn to Remy. The minute I turned my back on them, they could strike out again. I couldn't match either of them in a fight, and I didn't trust Finn not to hit first and ask questions later. Remy was hot-headed enough to risk it, too. Foxglove suddenly found his feet again and charged at me. He tackled me with a shout, knocking me to the floor and then using my prone body as a springboard to launch himself toward the back door. Finn let out a curse and ran after him, but he wasn't fast enough to get to him before he threw open the door and fled into the alley. Finn followed. Remy rushed to close the back door behind Finn and lock it.
Get the front door. Hurry!
What about Finn?
He can walk through shadow, remember?
Right. I got up on shaky legs and went to lock the front door, flipping the sign to closed. By the time I turned back around, Finn was already in the room. Finn shook his head at Remy.
Gone.
Damn it!
She dropped her sword, put her back to the door, and slid down to sit with her face in her hands. Finn squatted next to her and pulled her into a hug.
We'll get him, Remy. I promise.
I crossed my arms. Not to interrupt the tender moment you two seem to be having, but could somebody please explain what's happening? Finn sighed.
It's Foxglove. He's infected.
Remy lowered her trembling hands. It wasn't until she spoke that it was clear she wasn't upset, but angry.
You didn't come.
Excuse me?
Her eyes burned into my forehead.
You swore you'd return. Summer needed you. I needed you, and you didn't keep your word.
Except I did, I said. I came back to Summer as soon as I could. You're the one who told me you didn't need my help, so don't get mad at me. Whether I like it or not, you're an adult. If you tell me to buzz off, I'll respect that, even if it hurts. Finn helped Remy to her feet.
Jessica, it must have come after we left.
Jessica? Nadine Leah's daughter? Remy nodded and pushed some hair behind her ear.
She was glamoured to be my body double while I was helping Finn, Declan, and Foxglove find the source of the blight.
Finn put a hand on my shoulder.
A lot's happened since the last time we've all been together. Might want to clear your schedule so we can bring you up to speed.
I frowned at his hand before shrugging it off. First of all, we're not friends, especially since you wrecked my alliance with Winter. I barely even know you, Finn, so don't get all chummy with me. Second, I've got a business to run and clients to meet with. I don't suppose this can wait until after 5 o'clock?
Summer has fallen, Remy said.
What? I studied them both.
Impossible.
I'd seen the size of Summer's armies and the strength of its walls. Shadow had only stood a chance because Kellis infiltrated the court and destroyed morale beforehand, and that was with a full army. No other court had an army that could match Summer's after Shadow's crushing defeat. Titania had made sure of that. Finn nodded.
Winter, and a high court, too. We managed to liberate Shadow, but...
He sighed and lowered his head.
I made a cash in that favor you owe me, Laz. Help us take Fairy back from the monsters who've overrun it, before they find a way to come here.
Chapter 3 I canceled my two appointments for the day. Neither of my clients was happy to hear it, but I was thankful the frat boys decided not to reschedule.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?